This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
I'd like to welcome our first guest to the show, Adrian Dines, author, creative writing tutor and speaker. Hello there, Adrian.
Hello, Jackie.
Thanks very much for joining us on the show.
It's lovely to be here.
So before we get into your writing career, it was very interesting to see on your website that you originally wanted to be a Shaughnessy, a traditional storyteller. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I can. It's I'm not correcting your pronunciation. I just have an alternative version. It's a Shaughnessy. It's a traditional storyteller in the Irish Celtic tradition. And they were custodians of culture. They were probably what originally bards, and then they became the Shaughnessy. They were people who went from town to town, and they knew everybody's business and everybody's history, and they would weave stories, and people would tell them stories, and they were always the visitor, so they never had to do the washing up. So I thought, this is the career for me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, who wants to do washing up?
Well, yeah, but then when I was about 11, we had the before you leave primary school interview, and Sister Mary Pius asked us what we wanted to be. And in order of preference, you were supposed to want to be a nun, a nurse, or the mother of a bishop.
And oh, really?
I didn't want any of those. I said Shaughnessy, and she said, don't be so stupid. Nobody will ever pay you to tell stories. So I thought, fine, I'm going to have a career telling stories for which I'm paid. And I became an English and history teacher.
Brilliant. Okay. And then what brought you to the UK?
What brought me to the UK was absolute chance. I was doing my higher diploma in education in Trinity.
In Dublin.
And because Trinity, I'd been there for 5 years, and it had only opened its doors to Catholics at the beginning of the 70s. So there weren't many nuns amongst the students. So I'd had 5 nun-free years. And they came back in to do the higher diploma because it was very hard to get teaching jobs in Ireland at the time. And the Trinity higher diploma was renowned for being good. And I remarked to a friend of mine that the Birds of Prey took up residence in the back row of the lecture theatres, and they were eyeing us up for habits. And she said, oh, Adrian, I'm a nun. And I said, so am I. And only one of us was lying. It turned out she was Sister Helen Wynne, and she was doing a refresher before she came to St. Maur's in Weybridge to be headmistress.
Oh, wow.
So a few months later, she rang me and said, do you have a job? If you don't, come here quickly. I need an English and history teacher and a form teacher for one of my classes, and I need you to start on Monday. And it turned out that she was not only a nun, but she was in the same order as the only person I knew in the UK who was my great aunt. Was also a nun in the Sisters of the Infant Jesus. So talk about serendipity.
Absolutely, yes. And so you came over into the UK, and then I believe you embarked on a writing career by accident. What exactly happened?
Well, that was an accident too, because I met my husband in Weybridge, and we went to Aberdeen for 10 years. And when we came back, we had 3 little boys, and a friend of mine asked me to... But Tim was working offshore a lot of the time. So a friend was doing creative writing classes in the Churchfield Centre in Weybridge. And she was being bothered by a man. I'll call him Dennis because it's good to give people a name. He wasn't Dennis, by the way. But he had a little notion of her. And every time she read anything, he would lean forward and his dentures would come loose and he'd shuffle a little bit, and it made her very uncomfortable. So she said, why don't you come with me? Give you a break from the boys. So every Wednesday I was going to go and do a creative writing class with Yvonne. But I had no intention of doing anything with it apart from protecting her. And the first week I went, she started reading. Dennis leaned forward. I leaned forward to distract him, and he told me to get out of the way. So I thought, okay, fine, if I'm not going to be a seductress, I'll do the exercise. And it was to write a scene of conflict between two people very different from yourself. So I chose an 8-year-old boy called Gareth Fagan and a nun based on Sister Mary Pius. And I wrote a scene, and when I read it out the following week, they said, keep going. So, and at that
you did.
Time, I did, yeah. And I think it coincided with realizing that I lived in Weybridge, we'd lived in Aberdeen, we were back in Weybridge, and actually the UK was home now. I was never going to get back to Ireland. And so there was a funny kind of a diaspora and a homesickness. And writing a story set in Ireland was a way of managing that gratefully, because I love where I live, but I also had to deal with the fact that a part of me would never be at home. So sure. I was able to be home in the stories.
Yes. And so we come now to your first novel, Toppling Miss April. So how did that get published? Did you self-publish it?
No, I didn't. I wrote the book about the nun called Soft Voices Whispering, and I took it to a literary agent who said, beautiful writing, beautiful lyrical writing.
Oh, how lovely.
It's not, well, yeah, that's what I thought. But then he said, I won't be publishing it because at the moment, Irish writers are really coming out of the chrysalis and they're writing about sex. And this book doesn't really have any sex in it. And I said, it's about a nun. And that's how much sex you get in nun books. And he said, well, why don't you write? You know the way people ask you questions in a way that makes you feel as if you are so unimportant. He said, why don't you write something a little bit upbeat and outrageous and then go with that as your first book? Do you think you could manage that? And I got on the train at Waterloo and I was so furious. And I thought, fine, I will write an anti-chicklit book. I will write a book where the heroine is not a classic, perfect in every way, because she doesn't have a wrinkle, she doesn't have curly hair. So I invented a character called Monica Morn, who was 50, weighed 18 stone and had a cleavage you could park a bicycle in, and she was the one who was going to get the man. And I wrote it absolutely tongue-in-cheek and sent it to a new publishing house that had just started in Oxford. They were an offshoot of how-to books. Yes. And they were looking for fiction from previously unpublished middle-aged women. And as he had pointed out that I really didn't have anything interesting about me as a person, that,
charming.
Know, I know. I said, what, a politician, a prostitute, or, you know, the mother of a bishop? And he said, well, I mean, something. And I said, well, would it help if I told you I was once a nun? And his eyes lit up and said, were you? And I said, no, I just wondered if it would help if I told you. So I wrote this book called Toppling Miss April, and it was toppling the conventional idea of what makes a woman beautiful. It was very, very tongue-in-cheek. I sent it to Transiter thinking they would send me a letter back saying, thank you, but don't be ridiculous, go back to writing something serious. But they didn't. They called me the following morning and said, this is hilarious. We'd love to meet you, and subject to contract, we'd like to publish.
Fantastic.
It was good, but I didn't want to be a comic novelist because comedy is very subjective.
Sure.
And the stories that were in my heart were, it was almost like there was a story that tripped off my tongue. It was being, you know, funny at a party. But the stories that were in my heart were much darker, very Irish stories, and I wanted to write those. But he said there wasn't a market. So Toppling Miss April was published in the August, and then they published Soft Voices Whispering in the following February, and then Soft Voices Whispering in the October.
So oh, 14 fantastic. So there was a market for it after all.
Well, there was a market. I don't know whether it was a market or there was just me filling shelves, but it was great because it set me off on doing what I really love to do, and which is tell stories, because my publishers were absolutely lovely.
Great. And are you writing a new book now?
I am writing a new book now. I'm not with those publishers anymore because they stopped publishing fiction about 4 or 5 years later. But they told me, if you want to sell books, you've got to put yourself about. And I don't think that meant quite what it meant in my head. But they said, talk to people. So I decided I would talk to the WI because there were 8,000 members of the WI in Surrey. And I thought, well, I'll talk to them. They're nice people. So I did the interview and spoke to the WI for years, and then from there it grew, and I work at the what was the Winchester Writers Festival is now the Virtual Writers Weekend at Winchester, and various other venues where I talk about writing and storytelling. And so it all started off from publication. The book I'm writing now is a companion book for writers, because lots of people write and they write on their own, and it's a very lonely occupation. Because you spend so much time with the voices and the people in your head, nobody else knows them. And some days you don't know them, and you're not quite sure what they want, and you're not quite sure how they're going to get it once they figure it out. And you wonder, does anyone care anyway? And
it's a very... Well, it's very timely that you're doing this book, isn't it? Because during the lockdown, many people have written novels, so they probably need some advice.
Well, they have. Of course, it has to be published. And by the time it's published, there'll be a vaccine, and hopefully, and it'll all be over. But I think a lot of people who are writing, they know what they love to read and they have a story. But they don't. It's only when they start to write that they realise that for every story, there isn't a single way of telling it. You can tell the same story from any angle, and it's a completely different story. Like if you told Little Red Riding Hood, instead of being the omniscient narrator, once upon a time there was a little girl who went, if you told it from the point of view of the mother, you would have an unreliable narrator who was probably psychotic, because mm-hmm. she sent her daughter into the woods where she knew there was a wolf. She didn't go herself. Her mother is sick and she doesn't bother going to visit her. She sends her little girl into the woods and then she puts a red cloak on her.
She knows the wolf. Doesn't sound too good, does it? No,
what is that woman's problem? If you tell it from the wolf's point of view, it's a completely different story. So every story has a different way of telling. And I think it's good to have someone to help you figure out which is the best.
Sure. And when will this book be ready?
Well, Jackie, there's an interesting question.
Soon,
30,000 words in. Hopefully soon. It's working fairly quickly because it's all the notes, all the talks I've ever done on the art of storytelling. So I will definitely let you know.
Yes, do. You'll have to come back and talk to us about it. So are you doing any other fiction right now?
I am. I have two novels. I actually wrote a sequel to Toppling Miss April because the story for one of the characters was unfinished and she amused me and I wanted to know what would happen, called Polishing Off the Cherries, which are the cherries from her wedding cake that she baked in order to marry completely the wrong man. And then I've written two, which are, again, sad stories. They're both women forced to confront the events that moulded them, almost as if you discover you're an onion, but you have to peel the layers to figure out what the heart of you is. And she, in both cases, one is a girl who's lived a lie all her life through no fault of her own, and she lives with a hoarder mother, and the biggest secret that her mother hoards is the secret of the father and what happened. And so she goes to look for her grandparents in order to get some help from them to find out more about her father. And
well, it sounds very, very compelling. That I shall look forward to reading those.
And well, I hope so.
Do you have advice for any would-be writers out there?
Yes, I would. Write and then get it right. If you have an idea in your head, particularly at 3 a.m. when you wake up and you think, oh, that's brilliant, don't think you'll remember it in the morning. You won't. Have a bit of paper, write it down now. As soon as the idea, because all of us as storytellers and writers, we have two people in our heads. One is the creative person, the one who will go in and access all your memories and put bits together and make stories up. And the other one is the internal critic who is guarding the door of your memory. And she stands there going, but nobody wants to read that. That's a load of rubbish. You haven't got the words to express that. And she really is an unholy so-and-so. And sometimes her voice is the loudest in your head and you don't trust your story. But the acid test is, does this story matter to me? And if it matters to you, then you just need to find the techniques that will help you to convey it in a way that will make it matter to other people. And for that, you need help and companionship. And the best writers I know work with other writers. So find somebody who will support you and criticize you when you need criticism, and just keep your head up.
Yes. And what sort of writing routine do you have? Do you write for 4 hours every day, or how does it work?
Oh, chance would be a fine thing. I live at a place called Beck and Call, and I do a lot of, well, in normal times, if there wasn't a lockdown, I would run a lot of writing classes at Brooklyn's Museum in Weybridge in Sunbury and Thames. And for various different organisations, I go to Jersey every year. Usually I go to Winchester. So there are lots of places that I go, and I do writing workshops. And so I'm always getting the notes ready for that. And then I steal moments. My treat is to steal a couple of hours during which I can write. So it's not very organised. My life isn't very disciplined.
So you just fit it in as you can.
I do, but at the moment, happily, what I teach and what I talk about are the same as what I'm writing. So the plan is to get all of that information together, to empty a filing cabinet, which is packed with notes and ideas. And I want to just pack it all into this book so that I don't, I suppose it's all just to consolidate years of experience in writing and storytelling.
Well, thank you so much for coming and talking to us about this. And do keep me posted on the new book. That sounds very exciting. Would you like to give us your website details so people can get more information about you?
Well, it's adriandines.com, but it's a very out of date. So the best thing to do is just Google me. And I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. Probably Twitter is the easiest way, which is just at Adrian Dines.
Okay, that's great. Well, thank you so much, Adrian.
Okay, lovely to talk to you, Jackie.
Okay, thank you. That was Adrian Dines, author, creative writing tutor, and speaker.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio.